Hi, I'm Jeff Walters, and welcome to The Minutes. And thanks for listening today. It's great to have you along on The Minutes for the week of March the 24th, 2025. This is a City of Thunder Bay podcast. The Minutes takes a look at what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this past week. You can find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts, including our YouTube channel and our website, thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. On this episode, I'll have a rundown of what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this past week, as well an interview with Shane Muir, the chief paramedic with Superior North EMS. Council got an update on a variety of projects with the EMS service, and we'll hear all about it. But first, though, Council started off its evening with a presentation from the Thunder Bay International Airport Authority. The presentation was from Graham Ingham, the president and CEO of the airport, along with board chair Gary Woodbeck. The two spoke about a new branding, as well as economic development and growth at the airport. It was also mentioned after the presentation there will be an announcement on April the 7th at the airport. It has to do with a partnership between the city and the airport authority, and it's associated with Live on the Waterfront. A few announcements on Monday night. Councillor Brian Hamilton will host a McKellar Ward meeting on April the 16th. It will take place at the Slovak Legion and start at 7 p.m. Councillor Michael Zasino will have a Red River Ward meeting on March the 27th. It will start at 7 p.m. and take place at the 55 Plus Center on River Street. Current River Ward Councillor Andrew Folds will have a ward meeting on April the 8th at 7 p.m. It'll take place at the current River Rec Center. As well, Councillor Dominic Pasqualino will have a Northwood Ward meeting on April the 23rd. It starts at 7 o'clock, and it's at the Kinsman Center on James Street. A number of items came out of closed session on Monday night. There were some board appointments. Tessa Soderberg and Robert Tinsley were appointed to the Accessibility Advisory Committee. Crystal Simeone and Yen Tu were appointed to the Community Safety and Wellbeing Committee. Sean Kennedy and Jennifer Bonazzo will sit on the Heritage Advisory Committee. And Tessa Soderberg will be on the Lyft Plus Specialized Transit Committee. Also coming out of closed session, Council approved a salary increase for non-union and non-affiliated employees. Any increase for non-affiliated and non-union staff is approved by Council. This year, Council approved a 2.5% general increase, and there was also the creation of a health care spending account for non-union employees. More details on that will be rolled out into the future. Councillor Albert Aiello declared a conflict on this matter, as he has a family member who works for the city. Still coming from closed session, a memorandum of settlement involving Unifor Local 229, representing employees at Jasper Place, was approved by Council. As well, Council declared three properties as surplus. One is an easement between Inglewood Crescent and Limburg Street, which will be used by Synergy North. The sale of that piece of land is worth $2,278. One is a laneway that will be sold to an adjacent property owner on St. George Street, who will use the laneway to expand their lot. The value of that land is $17,000, and one is to create a new buildable lot on Mahogany Way. That lot, valued at $1,400, is sold to an abutting property owner. Council will also establish another closed session meeting, which will take place on April the 7th. After debate and discussion, Council voted to refer a report on the James Whalen tugboat back to administration. The referral comes after administration recommended to recycle the vessel. However, when the item was brought up for discussion, it was stated at least one councillor was contacted by a private company that suggested it could do the work for a reduced cost. Council referred the report back to administration to speak with the private company about a proposal that was received by some members of council. Administration recommended to stick with the original recommendation based on legal issues as well as timelines. The issue will come back to Council by April the 28th. Now, in the original report to Council, administration recommended recycling the entire tugboat. The cost to recycle the vessel came in substantially higher than anticipated. The lowest tender to recycle the boat is just under $590,000. Administration says it has found existing funding sources to make sure that the job can be completed. There was also some provisional work to keep certain portions of the boat, and those items range from about $53,000 to nearly $218,000. Administration says after getting the tenders, it called the Transportation Museum of Thunder Bay to see if it was able to fund any of the provisional work so it could keep select pieces of the tug. The museum's board said it will keep discussions open with the city to preserve as much of the vessel as possible. However, they would not commit to funding or accepting ownership without a long-term land use license or a lease at its waterfront site. Administration says with that information in mind, it recommends the full recycling of the tugboat. Negotiating a lease for the Transportation Museum is a months-long process and was presented to council in closed session earlier this month. In September of last year, a recommendation was approved by council to look at recycling the boat, but keeping the boat's bridge and stack for a future display, as long as the cost was not higher than $415,000. Administration says it prepared the tender so prices received would be based on recycling the entire vessel, and then prices for provisional work to keep the specific components, the entire top deck or the entire vessel deck from the waterline up. Keeping the stack and the bridge would cost about $17,000, of which the Transportation Museum says are not original pieces. Preserving 10 specific pieces of the tug would cost about $52,000, and keeping the top deck and its contents would cost up to $166,000, while preserving waterline items from the waterline up would cost up to $217,000. Again, the referred report will come back to council by April the 28th. Council approved a report on the spending of council itself, along with committee and board expenses for 2024. The reporting on the expenses is required as part of the Municipal Act. Total remuneration for mayor and council was nearly $680,000 last year, along with nearly $48,000 in expenses. The top salary was of Mayor Ken Boshkoff at just under $115,000. Councilors were paid between roughly $44,000 and $48,000, with one councilor, at large councilor Casey Attrenny, making just over $54,000. The salaries vary depending on some of the additional responsibilities some councillors take on, and those figures include fringe benefits such as the Canada Pension Plan, employer health tax, dental, vision care, and the OMERS pension plan. The above figures do not include additional salaries from other boards and commissions that councillors could sit on. If those figures are included, the salaries of councillors as a collective goes up by about $25,000. Appointees to city committees incurred another $500,000 in salaries and expenses. Scott Potts and Patrick Bushby had the highest salaries for city boards, taking in just over $40,000 each. Potts is on the board at T-Baytel, and Bushby is on the Port Authority board. Bushby also had nearly $12,000 in expenses for the year, including $3,100 in per diems. Nearly half of the council appointees to boards and committees made less than $10,000 over the past year. Now, when it comes to council expenses, Mayor Ken Boshkoff had the highest expenses at just over $10,000. The lowest was from Councillor Casey Attrenny at less than $1,000. Most councillors were in the $3,000 range when it came to expenses. Only two members of council claimed transportation and accommodation expenses, being the mayor and Councillor Rajni Agarwal. Now, for city committees and boards, the highest cost board is that of T-Baytel, compensating its members a total of $276,000, including expenses. Synergy North's board had about $136,000 paid out in compensation and expenses. Now, city councillors also received a report on Monday night regarding their annual increase in remuneration, or pay. Council has a policy in place where its increase isn't tied to the rate of inflation, with council receiving a recommendation to increase its remuneration by half of the rate of inflation of the previous year. This year, that works out to an increase of 1.1%. The increase is retroactive to January 1st of this year. Tying the increase to the rate of inflation first started in 2020. In a report from administration, it notes that the 2024 annual consumer price index rate is 1.3%. However, that includes the impact of the temporary HST holiday in December 2024, which reduces the CPI calculation. The report notes that if the December 2024 figure is excluded, the adjusted CPI for the timeframe is 2.2%. This puts the base salary of a councillor at $33,183.33, and the mayor at $100,941.19. The increase works out to about $300 for a councillor and about $1,000 for the mayor. The total increase in councillor salaries is $6,800 for this year, and that was included in the 2025 budget. Also heard about the Superior North EMS work plan on Monday night. Chief Paramedic Shane Muir made a presentation highlighting some of the major tasks of the EMS service. Some of the major items in the work plan for the district include non-urgent transportation services along the north shore of Lake Superior, consolidating EMS bases in Nipigon, Red Rock, and Terrace Bay, Scriber, redeploying the ambulance in Beardmore, creating the Beardmore Community Paramedicine Program, and advocating for First Nations fair funding for Nakina and Longlac, along with supporting the Anishinaabe-Yaski Nation Paramedic Service and Community Paramedicine Program. An expansion is needed when it comes to transportation along the North Shore, with calls initially dropping but slowly again increasing. Superior North EMS will submit a business plan to the Ministry of Health showing that an alternative model is needed. When it comes to station consolidations, Terrace Bay has been selected as one of the communities to have an ambulance base along the North Shore. Data is still being analyzed in Nipigon and Red Rock. In Beardmore, Superior North EMS says it did 243 home visits and 520 assessments and referrals in the past year after the ambulance in that community was redeployed to the Longlac area. As well, additional funding of $1.5 million was allocated to EMS services in Marathon and Longlac to provide enhanced service to First Nations communities in those areas. Superior North EMS says Longlac and Nakina would benefit from additional funding for First Nations communities. Superior North EMS says it met its response time targets in 2024, responding to nearly 28,000 calls. This is about 20% fewer calls than the year before, with a focus on proactive community health programs, a new dispatch system, and strategic deployment plan changes. The new dispatching system has cut the number of high acuity responses in half, allowing ambulances to get dispatched in a more efficient manner. Superior North EMS says its priorities continue to be workforce development, infrastructure and equipment, community health programs, technology integration and sustainability, and funding. The service says it has a new recruiting campaign along with a focus on mental health support. New EMS bases have also been opened in Oliver Papunj, Shunya, and another slated to open later this year along the North Shore. Nearly 6,700 home visits were completed through the Community Paramedicine Program last year, working to reduce the number of emergency calls paramedics are needed for. The service says it needs to deploy its finite resources in a rational and responsible manner and needs to consider best efforts mitigation of any adverse impacts on the community based on changes made to its operations and services. We'll hear a bit more from Chief Paramedic Shane Muir in just a few minutes. And finally, a few items were removed from the outstanding list on Monday night. The fence-related and sign bylaws are all off of the outstanding list. The reason is that administration is going to undertake a full review of Municipal Enforcement Services. That is the division that enforces bylaws. The items, now that they're off of the outstanding list, can be included in the full review of the division. And that's a wrap as to what happened at Council this week. For more information on anything that happens at Council, please visit our website, thunderbay.ca/council. Well, call 911 for emergency medical help, and paramedics will be there. Superior North EMS made a presentation to Council on Monday night regarding its work plan. That's giving an update on where it's at when it comes to projects across Thunder Bay and the district for Superior North EMS. Shane Muir is the chief paramedic, and he joins me today in the Minute Studio. Shane, thanks for coming in today.
Hey, good morning, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I read this report that you had that went to Council on Monday night. It starts off with some big changes that have taken place and will continue to take place in the district, at least for the first part of the report. So why is there such a focus on the district in this work plan?
Well, the district's such a large area geographically, and we have a responsibility as a designated delivery agent from the City of Thunder Bay to provide services out there. And it's a very complex need because these communities are spaced so far apart, but yet require those immediate assets and resources, just like the City of Thunder Bay does. So we have to plan very carefully and come up with strategy on how we're going to service the district and where we're going to place our stations and our paramedics in order to respond in the quickest manner possible.
Off the top of your head, are we one of the largest districts for EMS service in Ontario?
Oh, as far as Thunder Bay goes, we have a huge geography, much bigger, and that's actually the size of some European countries, so it is quite large.
Okay, yeah, when you put it like that, right? Yeah. So the one thing that you mentioned there was communities are far apart. We've heard a bit about station consolidations. Can you update me as to where we are in that plan?
Yeah, so these things all stem from our strategic master plan, and what we're really trying to do is some amalgamations on the North Shore. We've identified some stations that are just not really suitable for modern EMS services. They've gone well beyond their life expectancy, and we're looking to build some modern new stations. But in order to do that, we're going to have to consolidate some of the communities. And what we're speaking of there is those sister communities that are really about, you know, 10, 15 minutes apart. And we want to bring those stations together to not reduce any staffing, but really just build a modern facility that the paramedics can work out of and really help us retract and retain paramedics out in the district.
Have there been any decisions on what stations, I guess, or for those paired communities, what stations will continue to operate or will they be moved to, I guess?
So the next phase in our strategic master plan is going to be on the North Shore again. And it's we're focusing on the Terrace Bay and Scriber amalgamations. Terrace Bay has been selected as the primary site location, and we're moving forward with progress there. So it's been decided that that's the location that we want to kind of proceed with. The township now will take it back and probably go out to tender for the building if everything's approved. And then we can work from there to see how far the station's going to go. And then we'll move on down the road to Red Rock and Nipigon. That'll be our next priority.
Okay. And one thing I should say too, that you mentioned the township is going to do the tender. This is kind of like Shunya, I guess, where they own the building and we lease it kind of thing.
Oh, that's exactly right. So in order to, you know, decrease some of the burden on the taxpayer and that kind of thing, we do a model where we try and leverage the province to pay for the operational costs of the facility. And how we do that is we lease it from the communities themselves. So the townships or the community will own the building, and then we will lease it back from them and recoup some of those costs from the province.
Okay. One thing I noticed when it talks about financials in this report, and obviously it is, you know, financials are an important consideration as well. Talking about additional funding for First Nations service, specifically Nakina Longwak. Can you maybe tell me what that means? Because I'm not quite understanding what that's all about.
So the funding is provided because we have a number of First Nations communities in our catchment area, and that there's about 12. So we do a significant volume that has to deal with First Nations communities. So this funding is just part of a proposal that we put forward to the province saying that a large share of our workload falls onto First Nations communities. We need more funding to help support them. And they were very receptive to that. So they provided us $1.5 million to our land ambulance service grant to help support that initiative. And where we're really focusing it is in the Longlac and Marathon locations where we're seeing increasing and rising call volumes. So we know we need the extra staff there, and we're looking at adopting to a 24/7 model where we're going to have paramedics on site all the time.
Okay, so this would help kind of, I guess, pay for part of that staffing.
Yes, that's correct. And we've already implemented that in Marathon, and then we already implemented it in Longlac, and our next steps are to implement it in Marathon. We're just waiting on our new staff cohort to get onboarded.
Right, it is all about staffing. I've heard you say this a few times.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, we'll ask about staffing in a moment, so keep that top of mind. I want to also touch on a big part of the report was also talking about the changes that have been made in Beardmore. So I know there was a station there. There isn't any longer. How has that been going?
Yeah, so it's been a successful redeployment. So what we could really talk about is we've seen decreasing call volumes and numbers out of the Beardmore station. The building itself was also very old and beyond its life expectancy. So what we did is we reallocated those resources. We didn't decrease anything. We just took that ambulance and that shift and moved it down the road to Longlac. So still captured in Greenstone. But what we're seeing is well over 800 calls in Longlac and under 100 in Beardmore. So what was happening is Beardmore was constantly getting dispatched out to go respond to Longlac. So we just removed that resource and moved it down the road so they could be effectively closer to the call volume they're actually responding to.
Okay. And is there a community paramedicine program then in Beardmore? There was a change taking place there as well.
Yes. So we did start a community paramedicine program in 2023, and we've learned some lessons from that, actually. So there was a small catchment of clientele. I think we were only servicing 11 clients. So we're looking at kind of expanding that role. So we know we need to make some changes right now. And again, that is staffing dependent because we have been understaffed. It's been very difficult to operate that program. So as we go into expanding, we get a new cohort of staff. We're looking at maybe adapting that model to spread out some of that geography that they're covering and look after more communities to get a bigger client load and really help that population health.
When it comes to, we've been talking a lot about the district, but when it comes to the city of Thunder Bay, what are your priorities for Thunder Bay?
So City of Thunder Bay, some of the biggest priorities are going to be keep evolving with our technology and things like the medical priority dispatch system, which we know has really helped us reduce our call volumes here in the city. It's helped us better allocate our resources, and it's done some amazing things for our paramedics on the road, like get them their meal breaks on time, which they weren't seeing before, and really helped them get off on time, on shift, get back to their families. And those are really important things to paramedics and their quality of life while they're at work, and of course that work-life balance. So these are big improvements, big changes. The public has felt some pressures of that because calls that would have been generated in ambulance immediate response for low acuities in the past now have some delays built in. But that system is designed so that we can have an ambulance available for true high acuity emergency and be able to really respond to those lights and sirens emergencies when we need to, rather than being in a code black situation, which we were seeing quite often before, where there's no ambulances available.
Right. Yeah. We were hearing about that quite a bit. You mentioned though, staffing before, is that also a major priority for Thunder Bay?
So, staffing in Thunder Bay is always going to be priority. We need it at a certain level to, in order to maintain operations, but, it's never been a retention and recruitment issue like the district has been. Typically the city has been much easier to fill job positions and retain our paramedics. So that's why the district focus.
Yeah, fair enough. What about other priorities for Thunder Bay? I know that the community paramedicine program has recently moved over to Junot now. What kind of successes, I guess, are you seeing in that program?
So there are so many community health initiatives coming out of the community paramedicine department, and a lot of great successes. And we can really attribute a lot of the work they're doing to our decrease in call volume as well. It's not just the technology integration like MPDS. It's really the work that they're doing proactively out in the community. So the CP department's running a number of programs, and they're focusing on everything from chronic disease management to patients that are waiting for long-term care that are waitlisted. So we're making sure that they're healthy at home, getting the care they need. Everything to mental health and addictions response from our STAR team. So we're using multidisciplinary tools and teams to get out there and really respond to people where they're at, being a little bit more proactive and getting them their health needs sorted out before it ever becomes an emergency and a 911 call. And by being proactive like that, we can kind of make sure that we're doing a better job of looking after people's health, but also decreasing the burden on the emergency department and the 911 volume.
Right. Hard to believe that actually, I guess it's the old expression, right? What is it? A pound of prevention is worth an ounce of cure kind of thing? Something like that.
That's exactly right. And it's working for us. And we want to continue that momentum. So, I mean, we have a number of programs that we want to see kind of build up more into the future. And a focus for that is really going to be the sustainability of the funding, because a lot of it is pilot funding. A lot of it is kind of just 1 year up to 3 years at a time. If we can get that sorted into our baseline, it would be probably a lot better for buy-in for paramedics, getting people on board to full-time positions, and just being able to really strategically plan those initiatives and continue forward with the momentum.
I know that you were at council on Monday night. That's why you had this this report going to council. What was the reaction around the table?
So it was quite positive. Council seemed to be happy with the direction EMS is going. And, it's good to hear from my standpoint, because we do have a lot of priorities that we're working through. And it's been a number of challenges, but everything seems to be trending in the right direction. So we're doing a good job. I think we have a good plan going forward. And, we just need to capture that momentum and really kind of build on it and keep moving in the right direction so that we can see those statistics, those key performance indicators and things moving in the right direction.
Shane, I appreciate you coming in today. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Jeff. It was a pleasure being here.
I'm Shane Muir. He is the Chief Paramedic with Superior North EMS, and he joined me today in the Minute Studio. And a big thanks for listening to The Minutes this week. Of course, if you want more information about City Council, agendas, or minutes, visit thunderbay.ca/council. If you want to listen to past episodes or maybe provide some feedback, check out our website, thunderbay.ca/theminutes. You can also find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, you can find us on YouTube and on our website as well. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. I'm Jeff Walters. Thanks for listening this week. We'll chat again in 2 weeks. Make it a great day.